It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimera's Comics. Chimera's is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimera's Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, almost as always.
Almost as always, Steven Brown.
Yeah. I think we've learned our lessons. Dave Redfield is
choo,
here.
Choo. Let's do this.
He just did the caffeine tipping point during the theme song. You're like doing some kind of like treadmill, like elliptical thing.
I think I'm vibrating through different dimensions right now. So like we should probably get this going before I fade away.
And Neil Fisher is back.
Hey everyone, thanks for having me back.
It is. It's good to have you back.
Thanks for coming back.
Like it's been a long. It's been a long time.
Have we all been together in the same room?
No, this is our first. I've only ever listened to Neil on the podcast.
Really? You were not on because Neil was on during Horror Month last year.
No, for a while there, I was trying to convince people we were the same person.
You and Neil?
Yeah, because we look nothing alike.
It convinced me.
And very few people know you both.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if we have any common friends that don't know that we're not the same person.
Those are the only times I got to sit in your chair, Steven.
We were
actually, it's a good chair, isn't it?
Yeah.
We were the inspiration for Orphan Black.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Right. Yeah.
There you go.
Because we look so much alike.
Right.
But we're really excited about this because we've been talking about this for a very long time, ready to do this. But before we do that, I cannot stop staring at your shoes, Dave.
You like these shoes?
They're Ronald McDonald shoes.
They are size 17 and one third yellow Nike shoes. I
Why
bought at
are
Ross.
They yellow with red laces?
Well, here's the story. I had a friend's birthday party, and the theme was we were doing a wrestling theme. So I came dressed as Hulk Hogan, hence the red laces.
And
so
the yellow giant.
And the yellow
giant. With the tank top?
Oh, no. I had a yellow shirt.
You look like homeless Ronald McDonald.
You really do. Which I think is most of the Ronald McDonalds.
Right.
Because they tend to rotate those guys out like Menudo.
In the past life, I was. But I enjoy these shoes because they cost $13 and I'm getting my money's worth.
You really yes, are. You are. You really are. That's $11.50 already you've got done. Back to the topic. Those are the most distracting shoes I've ever seen in my life.
They're a bit loud because I like people. I like having people know me as I turn the corner.
Yeah, Dave's not going to sneak up on anybody in his shoes.
Yeah.
All right. We came with a topic.
We did come with a topic. We've been talking about this. We mentioned it on the air a few times. But Dead Girls, the movie that Neil and Dave have worked on, is done. It is out. There were screenings. I have children. I missed the screenings.
Yes, you did.
Steven saw screenings. But now it is on demand?
Yes. Yeah, it will be released on demand and DVD.
DVD.
Is there a Blu-ray?
I don't think there's going to be a Blu-ray. I wish there was, but we'll see. I mean, hopefully there will be. What they're doing now is trying to get people to add it to their queues on Netflix to get the DVD mailing service version of Netflix. And then it should be on Comcast, AT&T, all the different on-demands, and then hopefully in some family video stores and video stores nationwide and then international after that. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, Dead Girls is a very family movie.
Yeah. Now, you said it's on Netflix streaming, or is it the disc program?
So first, it'll be the disc program, but I think if people start liking it, start adding it, they'll add it to the streaming, too.
Awesome. When is that supposed to happen?
Well, it'll be... The DVD one will be when it comes out, so that's going to be... on November 4th, and then Video On Demand will be October 2nd on all the different Video On Demand platforms.
Awesome. Oh, good. And that'll be around the time this comes out. So
nice.
So chances are once you hear this, you can go and watch it immediately.
Search for it.
Yeah, we hope you like it. And, it was a pretty cool story that we got such a small movie distributed worldwide, so we're really proud of it.
That's the story we want to talk about, because every time I've brought it up when you guys have been here, you guys have always been like, nah, wait till it comes out. Nah, wait till it's on demand. And now is the time.
It has come.
It has come.
So, Dave, I think you've been talking about this movie as long as I've known you. Neil, when did this movie start? How long ago and how?
Let's see. So, probably... 2 years ago, the co-director, co-writer, producer, Del Harvey, came up with an idea to do an anthology film. And originally it was going to be two stories by him and another story by a filmmaker named Gary Schultz, who had a movie called Devil May Ride come out. So when that movie came out, Devil in My Ride, Gary got too busy. So that was one of the shorts that wasn't going to be included in the anthology. And I had been working with him, and we, Dave and I had Theta Phi's Never Die put into the fold. And that was probably January of last year. And then we kind of planned a little bit, added a third story through a friend of mine from college named Drake Linder, really, really good writer.
Yeah, amazing writer.
Yeah, and she, everyone always thinks that she's a man because of her name and how grisly her short is, but she's actually a girl and she's really awesome. And we added her short, and then around May, we started filming, finished, let's see, we finished July.
Yeah, before July. About yeah. Like a week.
Yeah, a little bit before July. And then we just were in post-production. Around December, I started contacting distributors, and we had about 7 to 10 that were interested. Then we had about 3 to 4 that we were interested in, and then we ended up going with Brain Damage Films / Maxim Media International, who's specifically horror. So we got really lucky.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is awesome. So, but where did the idea for an anthology done? Because I can't remember one since like the days of Creepshow and the sequels or Tales of the Dark Side. It's been a long time since I could think of any anthology film. I mean, I go back to movies like Black Sabbath,
mm-hmm.
but so there is a tradition in horror, but you don't see it often.
Well, Del, the co-director, one of his favorite movies is Trick or Treat, which is sort of a modern anthology film that sort of weaved them in a little bit more than a Creepshow or something like that. So that's where he got the idea, and he knew he wanted it to be about dead girls, you know, at its simplest form, and then it sort of took a shape of about revenge, which is what it ended up being. So.
So that's a common theme through. How there are what 6 stories in there?
There are 3 stories, like okay. standalone stories, but mm-hmm. they all are woven by a spine story or so, a wraparound, which is the beginning, middle, and end, basically of the okay. whole film.
Mm-hmm. And now everybody always talks about financing, how hard it is to get financing for a film. How was, you know, there was no Kickstarter for this, which seems lately to be the obvious way to get money to do things. How did you guys raise the money?
Well, we did do an Indiegogo. We asked for $10,000, but we think we got about $5,200 or so, which did help a lot. And the rest of it was just private individuals, luckily. We had an executive producer and one of the actresses that was in it, Mia Doran, who's in our Dave and I segment, Theta Phi's Never Die. She was the lead in that. But yeah, the rest of it was private investors. And the hardest thing about the movie was we had such a small budget. It was $25,000. In order to do, you know, 4 segments, we had, you know, over 50 actors, over 15 locations. And it was just a lot of logistical things to get right. And it was a great learning experience, too. We shot over 4 weekends, so we had about 3 to 4 days for each segment, which was pretty short, considering the amount of effects that we needed and people that were involved. So it was a really hard experience, but it was fun. It was rewarding.
Yeah, Dave. So, Dave, when did you get involved? Sounds like it was already rolling when
I was kicking a can back in the day. No, when that happened. So, yeah, Neil brought it up to me because we were working.
That was a Spielberg segment. Yeah. Oh, it's a movie.
So Neil and I were working together at South Loop when it came up, and
I was in Lumbar too because we worked there at the
apartment complex. So we wrote other scripts and we were doing other things at the time too. And then when this opportunity came up, we sat down and we started talking. And I think we wrote didn't we have a really gruesome idea inside of a church for like a wedding couple at first?
We had a wedding couple. We had about 4, I think, different versions. We had like really, really dark, which was the church one. We had like a less dark one. And then we had all the way up to Theta 5.
And then so we sat down and then we read the other ones and we're like, well, we don't need anything dark and gruesome because all the other ones are extremely dark and gruesome.
There's some fucked up stuff.
yeah, we wanted it to stand out a little bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, so we went with a little thing a little bit more I don't know, do you want to say comedic?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we both love, at least I do too, especially is like that campy fun type of horror movie where it has scary parts, but then also has the parts that lighten the mood where people can have fun and laugh and joke around about it.
So kind of like a Sam Raimi.
Yeah. And it was hard because when we were writing, and you know, me and Neil do a lot of comedy stuff too, and sometimes it's not intentional, but man, there was a good portion when we had like 3 pages of never-ending puns when like one character comes back from the dead and we're just like, oh, what's wrong? It looks like you've seen a ghost, and it's like, yep. You look a little pale. How are you feeling? And it's like, but through time, we start editing it down and down and think, what were requirements. We were trying to get it to, what, 20 pages?
Yeah, well,
short had to be like 19 to 20 pages.
Well, we wanted it to be about 20 to 25 pages. Originally, I think we were at like 55, so we had to cut all that out.
Wow. We
got obsessed with all the other characters, and I think in the original version, we killed like 17 girls. We're like, we have to kill as many girls that's, you know, it's never been seen before.
The bodies had to hit the ground.
One every page.
That's what we wanted.
That's what we were going for. What else? We really didn't even think about budget because we're like, let's go right. Do this on a college campus and throw someone out the window.
We're like, it can't be that hard. We'll go to a college right, campus. Yeah.
There are college campuses. They have windows.
Right. We'll just put a trampoline outside.
There you go.
We did see someone throw out a bed out of a window. No, not a window, doorway.
Yeah, we saw that. We saw, we actually did film part of it at a fraternity that doubled as a sorority house. And there were, when all the girls were there, all made up. All the fraternity brothers that happened to be there in the summer were like doing push-ups shirtless, trying to get them to come in their room. And it was kind of gross in there.
Does that work? As an outsider watching guys shirtless doing push-ups in a room?
I can tell you girls, it did not work.
Yeah.
Well, like listen, like I walked into, when we went into the dorm, that was pretty, I felt like I walked into a third world country. Because, like, there were, like, just lights, like, flickering within, like, busted up AC units in the hallway. And, oh, man, it was definitely a fraternity. One of the finest I've ever seen in my life, to be said. But we had to really consider the budget. Because, once again, it was, what, 25?
Yeah, it was supposed to be 25. We finally got it down to there, and our budget
25 for your short, or for the whole
for the whole
for
thing?
Our short,
and
for the whole thing that includes post or just 25 for the shoot.
25 pages just for our short, they defy, and then all the other ones were around the same amount. And ours was still a little bit long, but we wanted to get it probably around 20 to 25 minutes inside the movie too, because we figured with death and the, you know, ambient scenes and everything, that it would be a little bit longer, by like 5 minutes.
Trying to tell a story. We had to cut out that voodoo guy.
So the problem we had was is we really went campy 80s, which I love. I love Killer Clowns from Outer Space and like movies like that. So we had this guy who was like a shaman, who was just a bum who just got hired to pretend to be a shaman. And his chant was
Mama say, Mama say, Mama Musa.
Yeah.
Say,
Musa. And that was a little fun thing that we had in there. And so we had to cut him out.
We really fought for it, though, because, but then again, we didn't know we had to pay copyrights to Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah, Quincy Jones is coming out.
Yeah, we thought we were going to get the old Jackson 5 beating if that happened. So then what happened was the lead character in our original version died. She still dies by hazing, but in the original version, she gets accidentally pushed out a window and falls two stories from the sorority house on her head. But we couldn't do that, obviously, because of budget. So then
budgets.
So then it ended up she
budget and human decency.
She was drugged and, you know, OD'd on. I can't even remember the name of the stuff right now. The voodoo stuff. Hiawatha. Ayahuasca, whatever it is.
Yeah, no, it was cool, but like, so we did this, and then. So we wrote together and everything fit, and we were able to, we cut it down so we could, you know, be able to pay for this. And then later on, I think writing for me wasn't enough. I wanted to be there on the scene helping out. And I started out, what, PA for the wraparound?
Yeah, you were a PA first. And then
wait,
I think
what does that mean?
PA is a production assistant.
Production assistant. Yeah. So just kind of gopher and does everything.
Yeah. Get coffee, grab lights. Fan.
Why are you standing there? Leave. That kind of
leave. Stop drooling.
And then he moved up to a grip.
I'd love to have one of those.
You should get a PA.
Everyone should get a PA.
I'd like to just have somebody to plug these damn microphones in and move them down the stairs when we're done.
That's what our PAs are for.
Then Dave, you have experience.
I have experience.
Dave's applying for the job. Yeah.
Dave's going to clean up.
Well,
I'm
going
to go to bed after this.
I did move up after what, like during the 4 weeks of production, because I became a grip and I got to learn fancy terms.
What
like
does a grip do?
A grip, we
just hold stuff
pretty much. But we also get like pretty much lights, sand. You know, we set up the scene in terms of just setting the lighting for it.
Yeah, they work in the electrical department.
Yeah, so we
rigging lights.
I learned barn doors and the yellow C5 yellow plastic things you put on the lights and stuff like
Boy,
that.
Boy, David, sound like you learned a lot.
I learned a lot, and then I moved up.
I don't know
up.
What he's talking about, therefore he learned something.
He must have.
K-9.
We don't know. He knows something we don't know.
Then we moved, then I moved up to, towards the end, what, assistant director.
Yeah, to AD.
Or
yep.
Second AD, yeah.
In four weeks.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like Secret of My Success.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a cool shoot because we had so many Good and bad. What we had, it was a revolving door of different people who were specialists, freelancers. We had so many locations, so many crew members that we had to constantly be moving and changing. And
we had a great crew.
Yeah, everyone did a really good job. You can tell in the movie too. I mean, I guess the biggest compliment that we hear, regardless of what people think of the movie, is that it looks really nice. And that was a big compliment because with no money and not a lot of time, kind of rushing, I think we, you know, put out a good image on all the shorts.
Was it digital?
It was digital, yeah. We shot on the Canon C100, which worked really well for us. We heard it was really good in low light. We shot a lot at night, so that's why we used that camera.
And these cameras, these are like the super expensive Hollywood ones. You guys rent this stuff, right?
Yeah, we rented from a great company called Lens Rentals, which was really cheap. They deliver very, very fast, and they were really cool to us. And yes, we did the C100 on this one. We could have gone up to like a Red, but that would have been super expensive. But this one was like a nice in-between camera. It gave us the HD look that we wanted, like really crisp. And I think it turned out really well when you watch it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, is this your guys' first experience on a full set making a full feature? Or have you guys been on other movies? I know you guys have written tons and tons of scripts and gotten interest, but...
Neil has been on other movies. He was, what was that, medical?
Oh, yeah, not for me. Yeah, so I worked on a documentary called 10 Mountains, 10 Years, which is really cool. I was field producer. I did everything in Chicago, which filmed a deep brain stimulation surgery for Parkinson's, which is really interesting. And the movie dealt with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, so that one's really cool. So you can check out that on DVD. But
what was it called? 10 Years, 10 Mountains?
10 Mountains, 10 Years, yep. Yeah. And I worked on a couple other different sets before and after the movie. But this one was nice because this was the first set where I directed and was producing at the same time, too, on all the shorts. So I had a lot more responsibility and had to be mature in front of everyone. So that was different.
I was there for more support and fart jokes.
Exactly, yep. Yeah.
In that order?
And sometimes
or reverse order.
Reverse. Sometimes it's just fart jokes and no moral support whatsoever.
So then facing making a real film, even though it's one short within an anthology, what surprised you?
Do you want to go first, Dave, or I guess I can?
You could go. I'll make stuff up after you say it.
What was fun?
That's not surprise. That's pre-planned.
Okay. Trying to think. So I directed two of the segments out of the four. I directed the wraparound, which is the beginning, middle, and end. And starting with that one first before we get to ours, biggest surprise was, you know, we got to the location. It was in the middle of nowhere. It was in Thawville, Illinois. If anyone wants to Google it, I forget how far it is. But we went there and... the whole sort of street was very run down. All the houses had wood ripped off. There was like stray dogs and everything and babies, like no shirts on, walking around. And so we get there.
Damn topless babies.
The topless babies, they were scary. And so we get to this house that we had permission to shoot in, and we were met by two drunken gentlemen, one who had lived in the garage behind the house.
That's right.
Whose ex-wife owns the house, who gave us permission. And he was very, very verbally violent at first. We thought he mentioned a shotgun, I think.
Jesus.
And he was sort of, you know, butting heads with us immediately when we were supposed to be getting ready. So we were already like 2 hours behind.
He's like just a nice common local, not too impressed with city boys from Chicago coming down to Thawville.
A lot of grease, Buddy Holly glasses, you know, trucker hat. And luckily he had a friend who looked, who was a dead ringer for Donal Logue from, I guess he's in Gotham now, but he looked just like him and he was wasted. He's like, hey, just leave him, let him film. It's okay. And then... finally, what turned the point for us to actually start filming on time was he said, you know what, if I tell you guys you can't film here, I won't be able to see my kids. My wife won't let me see them. So just film here. I'll be out of your way. Got in his truck, floored
it. How does that work?
We never saw him.
We don't know.
How does custody enter into your shoot?
I don't know.
Look, we're responsible for this guy's kids. Let's just get everything in the can.
The devil in the details, John. Devil in the details.
Just wants his kids back.
So what surprised me about this one was even when we were so ready to go and fully planned and everything, it just all went to shit within 5 minutes when we got there. And that was the biggest thing I learned in the first one. And then before I give it back to Dave, on our shoot, we had written a 25-page short with all these great jokes and shots that I wanted to do. But when you're on set, things change so rapidly. And that's what I learned was, you know, I had 10 shots picked out, couldn't do those 10 shots because someone didn't show up or the makeup didn't work or the location, something went wrong. And so there's just a lot of improvisation. And I think maybe in my short, there might be 5 frames that I had planned beforehand, and everything else is sort of improv because you just have to. I mean, that's the only way you can get through the day and make everyone else know that or think that you know what you're doing, because you don't want to seem like you're frazzled.
I was really surprised, you know, like so for we did the wraparound first, and that's like, you know, the thing that ties them all together. I want to say the best thing about that was we got to actually, what, we were in a motel, right?
Yeah, we stayed in a really cheap motel, like 10 minutes away.
So it was cool to, it was like we were at summer camp, and I think, that was the one that helped out a lot because we really banded together. And after that one, the first shoot, we were ready. We were like, we were going to miss each other. We're like, I'm not going to see you guys for like 4 days. And, but like we really came across and like we like pulled out a lot of stuff. Like there was remember when there was Poison Ivy?
There was Poison Ivy. Yeah, and Dave and Alex. Yeah, they like boy scouted it and put like, what'd you put, like garbage bags and tarps, and then you put more dirt on top of it. So there was a layer in between the Poison Ivy. And then we found out later on there wasn't Poison Ivy.
It wasn't Poison Ivy at all.
So that was like 2 hours of work that didn't need to happen.
But we came together like really strong. And I was surprised when you're excited and other people see that, they get excited too. And then all of a sudden when we had to, like, you know, we were supposed to end like around 2 a.m. and there were some days we kept shooting till like 5, and like there's even like when we were editing you could hear like birds waking up, and
yeah,
we're still like carrying a dead body across the ground.
Yeah, there's actually a shot in the wraparound, I think it's probably toward the end, but you'll see that the character played called the girl, who's basically the devil, Satan, is walking, and then the main character in the wraparound's dragging a dead body. You can hear the birds chirping still. It's like 5 a.m. It's like right before the sun comes up. Wow. If you listen, yeah.
And you know what? The other thing too is everyone put on a different hat. Like we're one person, Amber, she was supposed to be just like costume design. But then from costume design, she moved to production and just was working and made these amazing like signs, and then what else, like that the dead body that we ended up carrying,
she did that too. Yeah, they worked on masks in Theta Phi, and then she did some makeup and hair when we needed it. So yeah, everyone wore many different hats, which, you know, it was a labor of love for everyone.
And I think that's what I was surprised. I really thought people were going to be like, oh, I'm only here to do this, I'm only here to do that, and that was not the case. We really pulled a lot of tricks out of our sleeves, and we're able to knock this thing out.
Yeah, it seems like those environments are, everybody's there to make the movie. They're not there to do this one thing.
Yeah, because they weren't getting paid.
So it seems like if they find something that needs to be done, they just jump in and do it.
Yeah, it's actually kind of cool to see. We have some of that similarness at the store, where it's a lot of people. When you get good people, you get good results. And you know, just from, I went to the premiere, the Dead Girls, and it was just interesting. Everyone in the room seemed like they all knew, like they're very close friends with somebody who worked on the film or something. It's less like, it just seemed like a really small community that kind of came together to make this movie happen, and that to see that extended out to like a larger community of all the friends and family of the people who worked on this film to be able to go to a premiere like this. It was actually a really cool event to be at. And I gotta say, the one thing that really surprised me, you guys were talking about it, the wraparound sequence, that house, when you guys get a chance to check this movie out, is fucking horrifying. They found the creepiest fucking house in America to film this thing in. Does somebody actually like live there?
The woman who,
the guy with his kids,
lived in the I'm sure it's the absurdly creepy garage behind the house they filmed in.
That was creepy too. Yeah, the woman who owned it lives in Wheaton, I believe, and this was like her second home that the husband was actually fixing up. And
it doesn't look like he's doing a good job. Yeah.
And as bad as like that house was, there was a who cares? And they're probably gonna listen to it. There was a pretty bad house right across the street. That was like half of it was like the siding was missing, and that's where like all those. I'm surprised that like some people just let their children just wander into another person's home. Like then we have a scene where it's like, oh, have you seen my son? He walked in here and he's like wandering.
Yeah,
around.
There's like stray cats. yeah, and weird. You know, we had great production design in the movie. Not to take away from that, but the house, you know, sort of helped us because it did look so decrepit. Yeah. I mean, it was beautiful in that scary movie sense when we first got there, and we just tried to make it more grisly.
That's awesome. Yeah, the house is like, as soon as this, like, the main character walks in a house, and you're just like, where the fuck are they? Like, this is a real house. I know Dave didn't build a house, so where the hell did they find this house?
Thawville, Illinois. Then we also, like, so we're leaving. We're getting all our stuff together, and it was like a domestic dispute across the street. And as we're packing these, our cars up, ready to go back home, you just hear like, if I see you again, I'm gonna pull my gun out. And I'm just like, all right guys, let's wrap it up, let's get out of here, everyone got your stuff? No, I'm still missing my backpack. No, let it go, let it go, we're leaving.
Yeah, that was really fun. And there's a great documentary. It's about 15 minutes that Dan Eden did. He's a great filmmaker and writer. Mm-hmm. And he had a 15-minute little behind-the-scenes thing of us the first 4 days of filming. So it's on the DVD if you check it out. It's called Let's Make a Horror Movie. And it kind of shows the madness of the first few days, actually the first day of filming, which is really fun. So give props to him on that.
Nice.
Tons of props. And you can see that on the DVD, which you have to put in your Netflix queue in order to get it, right?
Netflix.
Exactly.
I love you guys know so much about the movie, and neither of you knows the word Netflix.
Netflix.
What is this?
I feel like
what is this streaming service?
In order to move your careers ahead, it's a good word to learn.
Netflix, yeah. Or you can go on the website, just go to braindamagefilms.com, and if you look under Coming Soon, you'll see the Dead Girls DVD there. They made an incredible poster for us and DVD cover. And yeah, you can check it out there. Or if you know me personally or can bug Steven, he can message me, and then I'll send you a private link to the behind-the-scenes video.
That's true. You can leave a message on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
And we'll forward it.
Yeah. What did you think, Steven, when you watched it for the first time? Because I've seen this thing like 97 times.
I think to me it was confusing initially because I have a terrible memory. And you had definitely mentioned that it was an anthology film. And then I didn't realize when we were watching that it wasn't all. I know it's all the stories are connected. Like you said, in the beginning, the middle, end, they keep going back to that same sequence. But initially I was just like, I thought this was just one film with the same characters. And then when it jumped, I was like, wait, what's going on? And then I realized, oh yeah, Dave said this was an anthology, because I remember you said the Theta thing was the one you guys worked on especially. Mm-hmm. But I was actually surprised the amount of effects, and I didn't know the budget until y'all just said it. I'm surprised the amount of effects that dollar amount gives you guys. Like, and maybe that doesn't seem like a lot because you guys cut a lot out of it, but they're pretty crazy. I was going to say, like, the effects actually, you guys did a great job, I think. It's pretty violent. There's some pretty sick things in there. But it's actually pretty impressive, because I was just picturing like a lot of like off camera stuff, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of like on camera stuff. You're just like, wow, they did that, and that was filthy.
Now, was it all practical, or on a micro budget? Can you afford CG?
We had a mixture of both. A lot of it was practical. Like Steven said, actually, a lot of the effects we did do off camera, because we either couldn't figure out a way to do it under the budget restrictions, or we ran out of time. But yeah, we had a few CGI. Effects in there. Some of them it actually looked better practical, so we went back to the practical. But yeah, we had some CGI in there, not too much though, because of timing and constraints and then budget too. So
it's funny, because when you write something, you're just like, okay, I'm gonna write it, and I never thought like, well I gotta shoot this now. And one thing was, I wrote a scene where like a girl gets a latte spilled on her. And, you know, I'm just, like, walking around on the set and stuff I see there. And then I see a girl holding a latte. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'm like, wait a minute. This is the girl that's going to get a latte thrown at her. And I was like, I am so sorry I wrote this scene.
I didn't know when I wrote this that a person is going to be on the other end of this.
Yeah, I was just like, I was just playing around. I didn't know that people were actually going to get injured during this thing. But, like, we did that scene, and like, I didn't even think about anything at all, like how we were going to shoot it. But then next thing you know, we're putting like garbage bags in the ground, because if it doesn't work the first time,
we have to do it again and again.
And we're in someone else's condo that they were trying to sell, and we didn't want to stain the floors.
Yeah.
Coffee doesn't stain.
No, not at all.
And she was the nicest girl too, Jennifer Lennius. Yeah. And yeah, that was fun, especially because her character is supposed to be really, really mean, and she's not mean at all. Actually, none of the girls are mean, but they play very, very mean girls.
Allie's pretty mean.
The how many lattes did the girl have to get thrown at her?
Just one.
Oh, just wow, one. You got one of them.
Yeah, just one.
Yeah,
which was good. And yeah, you know,
Dave sounded vaguely disappointed when he said, "Yeah,
I'm a little disappointed."
I kind of
wanted to hear eight.
Yeah.
Well, that would be the David Fincher way. It's just not perfect enough yet. We have to keep throwing.
We're just
on
that
her.
Good, John. What do you want?
We're good at throwing lattes at women.
Never mind.
Who got to throw the latte?
Who did? Was it Madeline that threw it?
Madeline threw the latte. Madeline Matzy. She plays Taylor, who's the head of the sorority. She's sort of the queen bee, queen bitch of the sorority. And she was, I guess, in effect, hazing the character. And what she was doing was saying, change what you're wearing. She said, get me the latte. She gives her the latte, and it's the wrong type of latte. And then she throws on her and says, you can wear that stained dress tonight is a symbol of your stupidity. So
yeah,
lots of mean girls. It is a pro woman film because they all get their revenge. And
not pro mean women.
Not pro mean women though, or mean people.
But you know, and the other thing too, it's like in that scene, Steven, that you were watching, we shot, like I said, we shot in a really tiny condo. And when I was watching it on the screen, I was like, oh my God, this place looks huge. And we were using like sheets of paper for like the Greek letters and everything. But you would not, I didn't think, like when you saw it on film, I was just like, I can't believe this looks great. Like, yeah. I thought they were like made out of wood. And
yeah, that was a big worry. I mean, we thought we were going to film in the fraternity house, but it just didn't have the look that we needed. There are a couple scenes in the fraternity house, but when we got to the condo, it was a lot smaller than we thought, and it was two levels, and it wasn't spread out and didn't have a lot of room, which lends itself to filmmaking with lighting and everything. So we really had to improvise to kind of trick the viewer into thinking, oh, well, they're going into the main room, or they're going down this really long hallway, when most of the doors were right next to each other. Yeah. Even though they looked like they went 20 feet, they went like 2 feet.
And we we jammed these rooms with like 20 people, including the crew, but you only had to see 7 in the shot. And it's like, I was really surprised that once again, that's another thing that really surprised me, because I was like, oh man, paper. All right, who cares? Whatever. It's we're all doing this little short. And then I watched it on the screen and I'm like, oh my God, this looks real. Like,
yeah, you can't tell.
I was there in it, and this is incredible. I can't believe it. Hollywood magic, man.
And the third short specifically, it was supposed to take place mostly in a church, and we could not find a church for the life of us, believe it or not, that would let us film a horror movie in it.
I don't understand why.
They don't want dead bodies and sacrilege and Satan in a church.
Exactly. So we got lucky, though. There's this place called City Lit Theater downtown, which is a theater on top of a church, and we actually filmed in one of their big offices, and the production design did a great job of making it look like a small chapel, which it looks good in the movie. But
yeah, I would say, because I was like, oh, they got a church to sign on. Like, it actually looks like they're in a church, which is awesome.
Yeah, because that was probably the hardest thing for us to find was a church, and luckily we found City Lit.
That's awesome. Now, you asked Steven how his reaction to the film, but you guys had about 2 or 3 screenings. How was the reaction overall?
The reaction was good. A lot of people, like I said, you know, the best compliment was that it looked more expensive than it was. But we had good reactions. I think what's nice about an anthology movie is you have three or four different, shorts for people to get into. So if they hate one of them, they might not like the other one. So we were kind of hoping that would be the case. And, you know, some of the shorts are polarizing. I know the third one with the church, I'm sure Steven can tell you, is pretty dark.
Yeah, it's easily the darkest out of all of them. And they're some of the most gruesome things happen in that one.
Right, and a lot of people, you know, that one makes them uncomfortable, and ours gives the laughs, even though there are some pretty big kills. And I think the reaction was good. I think people, you know, had their favorite moments and favorite kills, but I think as long as people can remember a few scenes, then at least we did our job and they took something away from it.
Well, as you said, if people have it, some things are polarizing, people have their favorites. With an informal poll, have you discovered what's the most popular? You said the third one's the most polarizing. And
yeah, third one's most polarizing.
Your guys seemed to be the most enjoyable because it had humor. Was there anything else that stood out?
Yeah, I'm trying to think without giving anything away. One of my favorite scenes to film, which actually was exactly how I wanted it in my head when we filmed it, and then it actually turned out how I wanted it too, which is, doesn't really happen that often. But there's a character called Mac, who is sort of the sorority's boy toy. And at the end of it, actually, a lot of people come up to me and they're like, well, he's not really a bad character, but you had to kill him, which is a little bit of a spoiler. But the way he dies...
It's a horror movie. You have to kill people.
Right.
We understand this.
And his death is probably the one I've heard a lot of, just because of what happens to him and how it happens. And I think people don't really see it coming.
It was very gripping.
Huh.
Very,
if I could say.
Yeah, I could have a pun. It's very gripping. Let's just say that that he's no longer a man after...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that one a lot of people bring up, and
Steven just shifted visibly.
Because I'm remembering
chair.
The visuals, and it's
oh yeah.
What I like about that scene is, like, for his death scene, like, everyone was talking about it, and we're all just like, "Oh, here, we're gonna do it," and then like you can't see this obviously, but all of us came up to the living room where we shot it, in the living room / kitchen or whatever, and we all sat down, like it was story time, and we all sat down and we were all excited, and it was like, all right, let's shoot this scene. And you just see, like, it's like Kevin, like Neil's directing, and Andrew and me are there, and that's, you know, we got the camera and everything, but like everyone's there just excited. They're just like, let's do it, come on guys. And it was pretty like a really surreal moment, because I'm like, oh, I wrote this, and then I'm looking around, it's like there's at least 20 people that are excited to see this bit.
That's got to be pretty satisfying.
Yeah,
it how many takes was that?
Ooh, actually a lot.
We did the scene leading up to it, I think we did a couple times, but the actual death we did once. We had two or three cameras on it, and one was very close, which you see, yeah. And then the other one was a little farther away with an insert showing her hand doing some stuff. And it was kind of funny the way we did that effect. You know, the Mac character had to make out with Avery, who's the lead in Theta Phi. She's a nerdy girl who gets hazed to death, and she comes back to kill all the girls. She's really hot and, you know, tries to look like them. But
it's my my She's All That moment.
Yeah, She's All That moment.
Because every movie has one.
Yep.
And, yeah, so, you know, we filmed that, and Mac basically... I'll just give it away. That's fine. People can watch. So you can look forward to it.
Spoiler warning.
Spoiler warning,
this might
yeah.
be what gets people to watch it.
Yeah, so yeah, turn your headphones off if you don't want to hear. But so basically, you know, he goes up to her and talks to her, and they're making out. And there's a little bit of a mythology with Mac that he has a large member. And she, you know, kind of caresses him a little bit and then just rips it straight off. And, you know, but it was fun because we didn't know how to do it. And the makeup person for
I don't know how to do that.
Josh Gates came up.
And we were like, how are we going to do this? He's, you know, he's got boxers on with boxer briefs under it. And we're like, you know, she's going to have to touch him at some point. And so Josh is like, well, let's fill a condom with fake blood. And so he did. And then he poked a bunch of holes in it. And there weren't enough holes where it would just come gushing out, so she really had to squeeze. And what you see on screen is her just like really going for it.
I'm telling you, man, that latex stuff on it really works.
And we got really lucky because there's a great shot where you just see like a single long drop of blood go down his leg while it's shaking, like his leg muscle, and that was just accidental because it finally broke. And then that's sort of the end of that little scene there, which it was fun. I mean, there's like little inside jokes like that about how we did a shot or how we did an effect, because a lot of times it didn't work and we had to, you know, make it up on the spot.
Yeah, I think that's actually kind of like a credit to you guys, is like the amount of things that go wrong on a regular movie set, I'm sure, is really high. But then the amount of things that go wrong where it's just like, you guys are professionals, and I'm sure the directors are professionals, other people, but it's like you can't really control that many people if it's like their first time making a movie. So you kind of run into the problem, I would think, of like, hey, everyone's really asked to step it up. And it just kind of shows when you watch the movie, you know, how many people are involved and it came out this well, that much chaos working is actually like really interesting. It's just like, wow, credit to you guys for, you know, pulling it together.
Yeah, there was another time too, is like we had a stabbing scene, and we had a knife, and then we had to take off the blade of a knife, and we bought cheap knives for this, and then it's like I can't take this metal off, and it's just like, just cut it with the other cheap knife, and there I am just trying to saw a knife with a cheap knife, and I'm like, I don't think this is gonna work out that well, guys.
I feel
guys.
Like that's a stalemate.
It was
knife beats knife,
and I'm just going. And I'm like, 30 minutes into it, it's like, we have to come up with another way to do this.
That's like trying to cut your fingernails with your other fingernail.
Yeah. Little did I know that it was not gonna happen. I don't even know how well we did. I think we just broke it off or something like that, but. That was a scene, and then what else? We, you know, we always had a problem, but the thing is, like I said, with our crew, we were always determined to find a way through it, and it was great to have so many creative people on there, because if I didn't think of something, Neil, Dell, Amber would think of something, Zoe would think of something, Josh, Brett, whoever, an idea always presented itself.
Yeah, and one of the problems was, too, is that, you know, we went into it knowing that we were probably only going to get, you know, two or three, maybe even one or two takes for every shot, every scene. Because we had to move so quickly and our schedule was so quick. So, you know, in a normal Hollywood movie, we could have done any of these death scenes 5-6 times with extras of clothing and changing out the set, so if there's blood on it. But we really only had one shot for all the effects that we did. So if it didn't go well, we either tried to fix it on set, or we just had to deal with it and either show it off camera, like Steven said, which we've done a couple times, or fix it in editing.
Yeah, that's a big thing. A movie like yours really lives and dies by its enthusiasm, because as Neil's saying and Steven, you were saying, big budget movie, you have the money to come up with another solution.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll just build that. We'll just buy that.
Right.
You know, we'll have 5 of every costume. We'll have 12 of every mm-hmm. prop. On a small movie, you're like, hey, we need a knife to stab somebody. Here's a knife.
Right.
And then when that doesn't work, then Dave is trying to cut a knife with a knife.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if I can forgive you for this.
I don't think Michael Bay has these issues when he was making Transformers. I could tell you that much.
No, it was all CG.
Yeah. But good stuff, though. Like I said, I can't I can't stress enough how great our crew was. I love them all. I felt like we became family. It's great that I could still talk to them from time to time. And any chance we had, we were able to get together, man. It was like a homecoming. It was just like everyone, it was just a good reunion, good vibe. And it's just, that's just to tell you like how much fun we had on set.
I think a lot of it too had to do with the combination of Columbia College students or just college students in general with professionals, where that youthful energy was in there, the excitement was there, and no one was just looking at it like another job. So everyone, like Dave was saying, was very invested. So even if they were going to get a gel for a light or something for production design, you know, they were super excited about it. They'd bring more than one option. We tried not to settle on anything. We just tried to make it, you know, with all heart, which was fun. And I think when you see the finished product, to know that we only made it for 25,000 on 4 weekends, we didn't really, we wouldn't have a long schedule to do it. And with the amount of people you'll see on screen, the amount of extras and everything, it should come through that, you know, it was a labor of love.
And lots of fog.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was, everyone kept making fun of me. So the wraparound, there's a lot of fog, and I just got obsessed with it. And I said every shot has to have fog in it. And I felt kind of weird.
That's your J.J. Abrams lens flare?
Yeah.
No, it was great, though, because we had this like small fog machine you'd find at like a party store. And the thing was, is we used fog a little bit, and then it was just like, Neil was like, I need more fog. And we're like, Neil, I think we're out of fog. Like, it only has like a quarter of it of like fluid left.
Fog,
and we're like,
fog
we're,
formula.
Yeah, so we're just like, it's like, sorry, Neil, that's it. And Neil was like, no, I need more fog. And that little machine was a little engine that could. Because we filled up. We must have shot. Like, there's a scene we shot where a door gets kicked open.
Yeah, it's my John Carpenter shot. You'll notice it.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's like we shot probably 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
And a little tidbit. I am the person that's hiding behind the door that catches it when it gets
kicked
over.
Yeah, it perfectly stops in place. Yeah.
but it's just like we filled the whole entire house with fog. And it was just, and we kept on going like, oh, this is the last of the fog. And it just kept on going and going. Then we went out in the field, like the scary grass field, and we just filled up this whole entire outdoor scene with fog. And once again, we're just like, Neil, I don't think we're going to have any more fog. And he's like, let's use more fog. And that thing just carried on and on. I don't even know. There's probably still fog in that machine.
I think there's still fog in there. Yeah.
And I can't, like, it's just like the little engine that could, that fog machine.
Does the fog machine get a credit?
It should have now. It will now.
We'll add it to the IMDb now.
Dedicated it to the fog machine.
That's for the sequel.
The sequel is Fog Machine.
A fog machine that
kills
people. It's
also the sequel to The Fog.
Yeah.
It's just The Fog Machine, yeah.
And The Mist.
But yeah, that was great. I'm trying to think if there's any other any fun tidbits we did behind the scenes.
Well, there was just a lot of different, you know, experiences. Like the first segment, Over My Dead Body. It's supposed to be like a summer luwau party, and we were filming, and then just
with
starts
fog.
Not with fog, though.
Not
with
fog.
No
fog in this one. We didn't have
and you know, we have all these extras there in a backyard of our friend James's house in North Riverside, and everything's going really, really, really well. And the scene we're going to film after is with this tattoo artist who's like in a garage just giving tattoos out at the party. And right before that scene, we're filming this other scene, which is like a long take from the beginning of the short, probably about 2 minutes in, and then it just starts pouring, and we're like, oh, great, and. We thought it was going to ruin everything, but luckily it stopped. We were able to finish and then go inside the garage. But little things like that where, you know, your heart goes in your throat and you're like, we're not going to finish this. Or it goes down like at the beginning, at the end of the wraparound, at the end of the whole movie, you see this sort of army building, I guess I'll say.
Oh,
and
I don't know.
And so we had 50, yes. We had 52 extras there, and we were in Yorkville at another creepy house, actually. I don't know if you even know if we saw it. But so we're in Yorkville, and we're trying to coordinate 52 extras coming. We have a barn with like 6 makeup artists doing zombie makeup, and it's just pouring like crazy. And we never thought we were going to get the shots off, and we were running out of daylight, and it was just problems like that. And the last shot of the film, the absolute last shot, is like a crane shot, and we got it off just before the sun was completely down. And luckily, we had that camera that we talked about. Otherwise, you would not have seen it at all.
Yeah, and then there's another scene you see where like the three main girls from. The wraparound. They're walking through this cool area. There's pine trees and like where they connect. It looked great, and you'll see it towards the end. But like you know, Neil's out there with Brett and who
Leo.
Else was, Leo was there, And they're, you know, they're talking about where they're going to shoot and everything. And I'm like, I got to go pee. So I run off to the woods and go pee. And all of a sudden, like, as I'm peeing, I'm like looking around. I'm like, this is really cool. We should do something like that. And we did. And like, we shot that scene where like Noemi, Jessica and Rebecca are like walking down. I don't know if you remember it, but like, they're just walking down and there's like narration going over it. And then, you know, we do the final shot where like we have all these extras walking through a field. And while we were shooting that scene between the two trees, they're like, Dave, go run. Because I was a PA at this moment. They're like, Dave, go run and get this. I'm like, all right. And I run. And they're like, Dave, go run and get this. I'm like, all right. So I run. So while I'm running through this grass field that goes up to my knees, I felt something. Like, I'm like, what is this, a branch? And I kick it up. And it was not a branch. It was definitely like, it was a snake. And I was just like, oh, man. So, yeah, that's right. Snakes do exist in tall grass. And I was like, should I say something?
Along with the ticks, too.
Yeah, along with the oh, yeah, a lot of people had ticks.
Yeah, and I remember I hate things that look like spiders or ticks or anything like that. And we were right before the last shot where all these zombie extras are going to come out. And someone's like, there's ticks in the grass. Should we tell them before the shot? And I was like, don't tell them before the shot. Just wait till after.
But that's, like, we don't know.
But that's the other thing, too. As I was just like, I was saying, like, I was like, in my head, I was like, should I tell someone about the snake? And I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Yeah. I was just like, we need to get this shot. The sun is coming down. I'm not going to go through the whole entire grass for the PA. But for all you extras listening out there, FYI, there's a grass in the field.
There is a grass in the field.
And snakes ready to play. But it was just like, it was great. And like, there was that moment, like, we were talking about the ticks, and then we see just one extra, just like, she's walking and she's really selling it, and then she falls into the grass, and I'm just like, doo-doo-doo, she doesn't get bit by a snake.
Oh, shit.
I wish there were outtakes of zombies going, ah, ow, what the,
that would have been a good movie in itself.
I love that. So as you said, Neil, you got distribution and it's coming out on Netflix from disc, and then it's coming on demand. Did you guys break even? I mean, with a $25,000 budget and a little distribution, does that put you in the clear, or is it still just kind of a labor of love?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. With a movie like this, you know, we didn't have any recognizable names in it, any stars, so we didn't get any pre-sale money. So for anyone listening that isn't in the film world, you know, if you have a recognizable actor in your film, like, let's just say Brad Pitt was in the movie, which he wouldn't be. But if he was in the movie, you know, we could go to...
He's in World War Z, and it sounds much worse than
that. Yeah, that's true. And so if Brad Pitt was in the movie, we could go to Germany and Japan and all these other places, and they'll say, we'll give you X amount of dollars for him being in the movie because we know it'll sell, and then we can make our budget back that way. But we didn't have any names in it in that respect. So basically what we're going to do is all of our money is going to come from sales. So as long as we sell the right amount and we can break even that way, that's how we're going to break even. So that's why we need a lot of people to go and rent it and buy it and watch it.
Awesome.
That is. Now then, this might be a loaded question, but what's next? Are you guys working on multiple projects? Do you have something that's close?
Well, I know Del, one of the co-directors, co-writers, co-producers, actually, everyone did so many different jobs. He's working on a vampire film called Don't Save Me, which you can look up on Google, and also another one called Night of the Living Dong, and which is a horror movie. And Dave and I are working on, you know, new scripts and just trying to keep going. I've been working, you know, on some commercial stuff, and I worked on a reality show in the winter, which was fun. That was a really different experience. But
we did a comedy short by one of the actresses. She wrote it.
Oh yeah, and we worked one of the actresses in the film, Sherry Moshe. We did a comedy short called Auditions that she wrote, which is sort of a mockumentary that I directed, and I kind of fashioned it after one of my favorite movies, which is Waiting for Guffman.
I love that movie.
If anyone's seen that. So,
there's not a Christopher Guest movie I don't like.
Yeah, yeah, they're all so good. And what we did with that was it was just about actors auditioning and the casting directors who auditioned them. And a lot of it was improv and just a really fun time. We shot it over 2 days, I believe, over 2 weekends. Yeah, and,
yeah, yeah, 2 weekends. We shot it at our old high school.
Yeah, our old high school, we shot at an art gallery downtown, and I just got word today, actually, that the sound's done, and I believe the color is going to be done pretty soon, so hopefully you'll be able to see that. I know Steven saw a trailer for it before the movie.
Yeah, they put it on Facebook. It's actually pretty cool.
Well, if it's a short, what's going to be the distribution of that? Is that going straight online, or is that going to be attached to make the festival rounds?
Yeah, so we'll probably do festival rounds with that, and it'd be cool to release it online, you know, either for rent. We don't even need to have it for rent, but I think it'd be fun for people to see. I think it's going to be the festival cut's going to be about 15 minutes, which is really nice sweet spot. It was actually like 45 minutes of footage when the assembly cut was put together, which was a lot of improv. And I play a really weird character in it that wasn't planned, but you'll see.
You got me doing pushes. I'm a new man now.
Yeah, it's Marvin Goldberg, the Jewish principal at the Catholic high school. And but if you go on the Facebook auditions, a mockumentary, you'll be able to see the trailer. I think it's pretty fun. And that was one of the things we worked on.
That's awesome. I'm so glad you guys have come in. We've been talking about this, as I said, since you've been working on it. We could wrap up now. We could just keep talking about, I don't have anything left to ask you guys.
I mean, like, the key thing is what I want to try, if anyone's listening that's interested in anything like that,
I hope people are listening.
Yeah, I
think that every week.
Well, I just want to say, like me and Neil have been writing for a long time, I want to say, since, I don't even know, like, probably, what, 27 years ago or something like that?
Yeah, right, yeah.
But we kept on, you know, like, it's crazy when you start seeing stuff behind the scenes about how, like, things get made. And what was really great, like I said, I can't stress enough for the people that are listening, is, like, if you ever want to do something, you gotta do it in this day and age. I mean, YouTube, Indiegogo, Kickstarter, you have all these essential tools out there that you could use, social media as well. And as long as you have like a crew that will work, and you know, everybody, like, you know, there's always a group of artists that want to get together and make something. You could make something. Dead Girls is proof of that. And you know, Neil and I aren't going to stop. Like I said, we're still writing other things. We have what's that phrase? Logs in the fire or something like that. But we have a lot of plates are spinning, and we're not going to stop. I mean, the best thing about doing Dead Girls is we came to meet a lot of people, and we build strong relationships. And I could easily tell you that, you know, for the next project me and Neil do, you know, those people are going to come and answer the call, and, you know, we're not going to stop. It's just like, and that's what I want people to know, is if you want to do something, you just do it. No excuses.
Yeah. To echo what Dave's saying, you know, this movie started because we were waiting for funding on another film on a script. And it was just, we were waiting for a long time. I think it was about 3 years. And we just said, you know, why don't we just make something? And we didn't really know what to make. And when we did get the funding for Dead Girls, you know, we thought, originally the plan was to make something with a lower budget and try to do it just to see if we could, and also to limit the amount of money we had to make back. And so when the $25,000 number hit, we thought it was the perfect number, but also we wanted to have more money for more effects and more production design and all that. But we knew what we had, and we just decided, let's do it. We did over 4 weekends. We had all these people, like Dave said. And I think, you know, one of the biggest learning experiences for me was that even if you don't have the money, like Dave said, just do it. And then as far as contacts go, you know, I mean, anyone you ever meet is a potential contact or a person you can get a favor from in the future. I mean, we met so many people who are like, hey, remember you said one day 10 years ago that we could use your house if there was ever a movie? And it's like, yeah, you could do that still. And
can we use it tomorrow?
Yeah, right.
We really need it.
Yeah, we need it tomorrow.
I don't know if you knew this, but there's guys starting to kick us out.
And there's going to be blood.
Lots of blood and fog.
So that was big.
I don't know which is worse for your house. Is it either the blood or the fog?
Blood or the fog, yeah, exactly.
Blood, fog. That's the next
blood
movie,
and
Neil.
Fog.
Yeah, that's the next movie me and Neil are going to do. Copyright.
That's what it should be. And one of the more important things, too, was there's so many articles out there about making a film. And I heard from a lot of people when we were done with the film that, you know, you're not going to get distributed. Your movie's too small. You have no names in it. Your movie's too small. Distribution's really, really hard, which it is, but you're not going to do it. But, you know, I just wanted to make sure that the movie was out there because we had so many crew members work tirelessly on it. And I didn't want it to be a movie that, you know, we just passed around to each other, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, it's something you can show off as art to your friends. But when it was done, we really worked hard to get it out. And we just kept calling people, kept bugging them, and kept bugging and bugging and bugging. And then finally, we, you know, we got some yeses, and it came through. So, I you know, there were several times where I wanted to be like, I can't do this anymore. But you just got to keep going. And just remember why you started it in the first place, which for me, you know, I've loved movies since I was a kid, so I wanted to make one.
And this has been, like, we shot this, what, 2 years ago?
Was it? Oh, well, yeah, not last summer, but the summer before. Yeah.
So and now it's coming out. Just to show you, like, it is a long time for things to happen, but it's happening, you know, and we're going to move on. And what's cool, like I said, we got IMDb credit. That's pretty cool. And we were able to shoot that mockumentary, you know, because of the people we worked with, and we're gonna do another project soon, And, you know, we're, like I said, we're going to contact the crew that we worked with on this one, and we're going to assemble again, and we'll do something else, and we'll just keep going and going. And then eventually just, you can only build up and do bigger and bigger things.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for the crew members that were involved or anyone who donated on Indiegogo and helped us out, one of the cool things is, you know, even if no one sees this movie outside of whoever's in this room and maybe 10 other people, just to go, hey, you know, my movie, it's going to be in a video store. It's going to be on Netflix. I mean, that's just a huge accomplishment awesome. In itself, yeah. You know?
And it's, just, it's interesting to take something, like you guys said, it's a concept. Some of you guys just had, you know, written down on a bunch of sheets of paper or something. And now it's like you could physically go to a store and physically buy your own movie. Like, that's
right.
Awesome.
Right. The fact that it's finished and you have something out in the world, you don't have an idea that you're like, oh, I bet I could do that. That would be cool. Or, which is even more frustrating, something's half finished. I think it's one of the most valuable lessons that you said, Neil, is that I found that every big project that I've started, there comes a point about midway through where the enthusiasm that and the novelty that had fueled you getting started has completely worn out. And then you don't see the finish line, which gives you that extra burst of energy. And that's the easiest time it is to stop, and you want to. Mm-hmm. And I think that what you just said is a great lesson of persevering and pushing through. So once again, Dead Girls is available for rent on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And where is it on demand?
So on demand, it'll be on, if you have Comcast, Xfinity, Dish, it'll be under your, I believe, rent or purchase sections on the movie. So I'm not sure how much it'll be yet, but it'll be on there starting October 2nd. And then DVD, you can either buy from the website at braindamagefilms.com or probably just Google it. It'll be November 4th for the DVD.
Nice. Great. And Neil, you're on Twitter, right?
Yes, I'm on Twitter. I'm at Fishface, FISCHFACE.
And Dave?
I am on Twitter and Instagram, David_Redfield.
Cool. As always, you can follow the show. You can follow me and Out of My Book on Twitter. And follow our Facebook page. Give our Facebook page a like. And you can see Steven at Chimera's Comics.
19 South LaGrange Road.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not in My Book production.
Take that, meatball!